Okay, hi, I'm Brian Cordell. I'm a developer advocate at Egalia.
And I'm Eric Meyer. I'm also a developer advocate at Egalia. And would like to introduce two guests today. Guests, please introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Will Bamberg. I'm a technical writer, and I work for an organization called Open Web Docs.
Hi, my name's Estelle Weil. I'm also a technical writer and a front-end engineer, and I also work at Open Web Docs.
Wow, what a coincidence. We got two guests from the same organization.
Yeah, weird. Actually, they're here today, of course, to talk about Open Web Docs, which some of our listeners may have heard of. We've certainly mentioned it on the podcast before. But yeah, we wanted to get more into what Open Web Docs is and where it came from and all that sort of thing. So let me just start with that. What is Open Web Docs?
And why is Open Web Docs?
Well, we're getting to that.
I'll start with what is. We are a collective of technical writers, all former engineers that document the web platform, as the web is the biggest tech platform there is. It needs to be well documented, and that's what we do.
What would you say Open Web Docs is, Will?
I have multiple answers to this, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, one is obviously what Estelle said. And I mean, in terms of the actual work that we do, a lot of that comes through writing and reviewing and maintaining web documentation on MDN and also for BCD, browser compact data.
I was going to say MDN and BCD standing for...
Well, MDN doesn't actually stand for anything anymore technically, but developer.mozilla.org. It used to stand for Mozilla Developer Network, but whatever. I think Open Web Docs is also a sort of kind of a vehicle for safeguarding web documentation, for like making sure that the long-term health of web documentation is taken care of. And there are people who are going to continue to look after it and maintain it and extend it. And it's not just going to stop being looked after one day because, you know, somebody decided they couldn't afford to do it anymore. So that's another piece of it, I think. And I think another piece of it is that it's a sort of hub for different organizations who have an interest in there being good web documentation can collaborate and work together to advance these goals. So that includes web standards organizations, that includes browser developers, and it includes web developers, and it includes tech writers. And so we're at our best, I think, we're an organization that helps to bring those places together.
Okay. So you said Open Web Docs primarily works on MDN and BCD, which is what runs the compatibility tables at the bottom of all the MDN pages, right?
And can I use?
But Open Web Docs is not actually part of Mozilla.
We are a completely browser agnostic, corporate agnostic, open collective. So we are funded by a lot of organizations, both tech companies and individuals and governments. But we aren't wedded to any of them. So, you know, we don't write documentation for any specific organization. We write about all the specifications. Well, not all the specifications. There's more than 500 specifications. We write about a lot of them. But we basically make sure that every feature we know about is well documented. Even, you know, like browsers will write documentation when they release a new feature. And then it might not be updated because it's no longer the focus of anyone's attention. Our collective basically looks through all the old documentation all the time. And when we see something, it's not like, oh, this is not our priority. Our priority is making sure that everything is up to date. So even if it's a feature that isn't on anyone's radar, if it gets on our radar, we'll update it and make sure that it's modern, up to date, and non-erroneous. We're very pedantic.
Being pedantic is probably an asset. You know, Brian said, why is Open Web Docs? And that's a relevant question. Like, why does Open Web Docs exist? Why does it have to exist?
Well, I think to represent the interests of a lot of different organizations, I suppose. I mean, if you look at MDN, contributors to MDN include people who are employed by Mozilla to contribute to MDN, people who are employed by Google to contribute to MDN, Open Web Docs staff, people who are employed by the W3C, and volunteers. And all those people are contributors to MDN and also maintainers of MDN as well. They get to review other people's PRs and and collaborate on this shared project, right? So I think there's always an interest, for example, in browser developers to have good up-to-date documentation for the features they're just shipping now. And they're usually quite well set up to do that. So, I mean, for example, like Mozilla, when Firefox ships a new feature, they flag the feature as a thing that needs docs and MDN. And that goes through to a team of people that's employed by Mozilla to maintain those docs and MDN. A similar thing happens with Google Chrome as well. You know, and so features that ship in new browsers, there's typically some kind of process associated with those browsers to update the docs, you know. And that usually works quite well, but there's a lot of documentation that's not associated with that. And there's features that slip through the cracks, or docs that become out of date or don't reflect current practices, and there's not really anybody to come and say that this stuff needs to be updated as well. And I think a lot of that stuff is what we take care of.
One of the questions I wanted to ask is, how did each of you get started with Open Web Docs? And, you know, when was that, and what keeps you still there?
Well, I worked at Mozilla on MDN for a long time. The first attempt Mozilla made to get rid of the old Zool-based add-on stuff was an add-on SDK, and I started working at Mozilla to document that thing. And then I stayed at Mozilla after Mozilla decided they didn't want to do that anymore, and they did web extensions instead, which is a kind of clone of the Chrome APIs for extensions. And that was the one that eventually took, and I started working on MDN through that. So I have got a lot of history with MDN and web documentation. And when Mozilla laid off the docs team in 2020, I was one of the people let go. And that was one of the things that were probably, I suppose, the thing that caused Open Web Docs to be formed as an independent entity, because there was a recognition that, you know, it was important to kind of safeguard, well, web documentation, right? To make sure that it wasn't just, you weren't going to wake up one day and find there was nobody being paid to document the web, right? So.
Which is basically what happened, right? It was like, well, MDN's still there and people can still submit pull requests or whatever, but who's actually in charge?
Right. And I mean, well, like another piece of conversation that happened then, I think, was the idea that, you have to pay people to maintain stuff. You know, that there's a lot of volunteers that do a lot of incredible work, but ultimately technical writing is a profession. You need professionals to do it, which means people need to be paid to do it. Otherwise it's not going to happen in a reliable way. So anyway, so I actually went to work for the Matrix Foundation on the Matrix spec. And they're great. They're great people. But I sort of missed MDN, because MDN is this platform that reaches so many people, and it's just such a privilege to be able to do that, to be able to reach so many people in docs, and I couldn't really get free of it in that sense. And in the meantime, Open Web Docs had got set up, and the first employee was Florian. And so after a little while of working on Matrix, Florian came and said, do you want to come work on Open Web Docs? And I said, sure. So that was how it happened for me.
And by Florian, you mean?
Florian Schultz, who's our beloved director.
And founder.
Yeah. Okay, Estelle, how about you?
So I started writing documentation on web documentation back in 2007, I think, or 2006. And one of my first well-visited blog posts was the Firebug tutorial. So Firebug was the first dev tool for a browser. And when on the Firebug homepage, when you went to firebug.org or whatever their site was, the tutorial on how to use Firebug actually linked to my blog. I had already gotten started writing documentation, but that definitely gave me a kick in the pants that, you know, it was just pure popularity. I didn't get paid for any of it. But I did also do BCD type stuff. I would test everything in browsers. So Quirks Mode, which is done by PPK, and my blog would have browser features and browser support. So I just had tables and tables and tables of every feature that I would write about, I would test in every single browser, and none of that was automated. So I'm so glad that BCD Collector exists. I stopped doing it many years ago. But anyhow, I was working as a front-end engineer, but kept documenting the web. And then I got a contract to work for MDN. So I was a contractor on MDN from 2018 to 2020. after that contract ended, I went back to being a front-end engineer for Williams-Sonoma as a contractor. I was their front-end architect for CSS. The entire time I was there, I was learning about what people didn't know and how much stuff people didn't know. So when I heard about the fact that MDN, mostly Open Web Docs, was looking for a technical writer to work on MDN, I was like, yay, I have all these, you know, I had been writing documents for 2 years or a year and a half, and I was like, I really have all this other documentation that I really want to write, but I can't spend all my time writing documentation because I need to pay my mortgage. So it was really fantastic. I applied for the job, got it, and have been there now for over 3.5 years, which I did note today. One thing that's really interesting is this is an open source collective where we are paid, you know, it's a real job. And this is the longest job that I've had in tech, because when I worked at Yahoo, they had layoffs. And I was in one of those rounds. When I worked at a company called Instart Logic, they went under, and before that they had a layoff round. When I worked at Topspin, they had layoffs. So all of these tech companies that are funded by, you know, round A, round B, round Z, they have rounds of layoffs. And so you're changing people. But here, I think the work that we do is vital, and we are actually able to keep our job so far for 3.5. And in the case of Florian and Will, they're already at 4 years.
Yeah, that's the risk with tying these things to private enterprise. You know, you think that they'll always be around, maybe even like the ones that are long, like, I don't know. I mean, I think that most people would have guessed that Microsoft would still make a web engine right now. You know, like if you'd asked 15 years ago, if you'd asked 20 years ago, people would probably think that Opera would still be making an engine. You know, I don't know. I remember one of the first things when I got into the web, I bought some, like, you know, Fortune 500 consultants book about you know, the web and getting involved in doing things with, you know, who's going to control the future. And it was like foregone conclusion. I mean, Netscape, I mean, it's not even, you know, Bill Gates lost, what a fool, you know, like, now they're trying this desperate thing with, you know, to develop an internet browser, but it's terrible, and, you know, they'll never get anywhere with that. I'm really floored that we have like a separate entity whose job is, like, we have the stated goal of supporting the documentation of the web. Like, that is our goal. I think it's super. I mean, I was an advocate for creating it. I just went and looked up, our announcement was from the same day as the official announcement, you know, announcing Open Web Docs, January 25th, 2021. And Egalia, we are, you know, a small company compared to Google or Microsoft or whatever, but we've been a financial supporter since the beginning. It's not. I'm really pleased that it was not even controversial, I can tell you. I mean, I guess, but everybody said yes. And then the next year, everybody said yes again. And now it's just a part of our annual sponsorship.
I think, we really appreciate it, right? I mean the money, and also just the support and recognition, I think, which I think we feel from Egalia and our other supports as well. It's, you know, obviously the money is really important, but the recognition is important too, right?
So I'm curious, what are some cool things you've gotten to do while at Open Web Docs?
I'm going to start with the part that's less interesting but more needed. I'm working on a project. There was a lot of documents that were missed over the years. So I'm not sure who exactly created it. I think it was the WebDX group created the missing baseline. It looks at the BCD, the browser compatibility data, and checks to see what documents are missing from MDN.
Oh, so it looks in BCD, and if it doesn't have an MDN URL as a reference, you can get a list of all of those. Okay.
Yes. So I went through all of the documents that were missing that were widely supported, which meant that all the browsers had been using it for over 2 years. and recruited a volunteer to help out, and we wrote all the documents. So all that missing documentation was documented. The second project was the new features that are in all browsers. So I went through at the end of February, found everything that was supported in all browsers that was missing documentation, wrote all those. The third part is the ones that got supported in March and so far in April. I've not tackled those yet. So there's about 12, no, it's actually about 40. They're all ARIA element, you know, HTML element or HTML element internals, ARIA features. So I created a list of those that need to be documented, but that is an upcoming project.
I mean, that's pretty cool to have looked at the, you know, here are all of the things that nobody has ever written. These web platform features that exist and are supported, and in some cases have been supported for a very long time, but nobody ever actually wrote the documentation. Let's write the documentation. Like, that's the kind of thing that I would imagine would be a hard sell in an in-house group, right?
Yes.
Well, I don't want to write about the really cool new stuff. I want to write about the stuff that we've supported for 10 years, but nobody ever got around to writing.
Right.
I can easily see someone saying, no, that's not going to make line go up. No, but you have the ability to do that. That's awesome.
It is. That's exactly it. Like, because we're not working on KPIs for some marketing model, right, we can attack what really is missing, but doesn't bring in the revenue. So, and the fun thing is I learned some stuff because there were a lot of SVG features. So I learned a lot about these attributes and therefore the interfaces and the properties of the SVG APIs. Because what I also like to do is whenever I have a feature is create an example. So in the documents that we create, we try to always create an entry-level example. So sometimes they're not real world. We do try to do real world, but sometimes if you ever needed to use this, you'd have a 2,000-line application. So let me just show you how you change a color with this feature. I'm not going to show you the entire feature, but here's this page that does show you this entire feature. That feature is included on this page. Here's the two lines that we used and the quick effect that this does. So that was not the most exciting, but it definitely made it so that there's way fewer broken links on MDN. So on MDN, if there's a link that's broken, if the documentation doesn't exist and it should exist, the link is red with the squiggly underline. And the second you create the documentation, it turns blue with a solid underline. So it's not just a color that shows the differentiation. So exciting stuff that I get to do is I'm really into CSS. And I have been going through every single CSS specification and creating a module landing page. So most of them have module landing pages. So a spec we call a module because it's not just a spec, because a feature might have level 3, 4, and 5. So we call it module because it encompasses 3, 4, and 5. So I've been able to go through the specifications and create module pages, create examples, and rework the guides or create new guides if guides are missing. One other thing we do, and that I love doing, though it can be frustrating, is reviewing PRs. So browser vendors will have a new feature and they will document it and we review it. The OWD team reviews the PRs to make sure that, you know, everything is covered, that it's accurate, but also having been a web developer for so many years and also having taught web development and worked with new people in web development, I always take the perspective of either junior or mid-level or advanced developer, depending on what the topic is. But I review it I get to review these new features from that perspective. So I deep dive into these features like there's no tomorrow, learn them inside and out, and get to make sure that the documentation and the guides really are able to provide the information that a junior, mid-level, or senior front-end engineer would need to implement that feature. So, like, I know everything there is to know now about anchor positioning and CSS carousels because I got to review those specs. So that's, like, the funnest part of my job. but also the most frustrating because you know you want to get that PR out as soon as possible, but you know that you want it to be as accurate, as deep, and as pedantic as possible. So it's really hard to do, and it takes a lot of effort. Sometimes it feels like you're putting as much effort reviewing a PR as it might have taken to write it, because like the last PR that I reviewed, I definitely spent a full 40 hours reviewing it and creating examples to help guide the original author to make a storyline that is easier for a mid-level engineer to fully implement. So there's the boring stuff that you feel really excited about because you're doing something that you know needs to be done. And then there's the hard parts, you know, mentally most difficult parts, because it's learning new stuff. That is my favorite part of the job. And then there's the CSS modules, which is just basically a reviewer crash course for me every single week when I get to do that. Knowing that I'm helping people and fully understand what's going on and basically being the liaison between the spec authors and the developers. And Eric and I wrote the book together and I wanted to subtitle it. We read the specifications so you don't have to. And that's really what I feel like I'm doing every day.
But what about you, Will?
I guess I could talk about a couple of things. One is not actually like documentation writing project as such, it's infrastructure. And this was a few years ago when I led a project to convert the source format for MDN from HTML into Markdown, which is might seem boring. I don't know. Maybe it does, but not to me. So in the old days, MDN was a wiki, and people usually edited it using a WYSIWYG editor. You could type something that looked like kind of like formatted text, and then it converted into something kind of like HTML, which is stored in a database. And you could also look at the raw HTML, which you quite often had to, because the WYSIWYG editor had, you know, quirks and stuff. But in the back end, in the database, it was all just HTML. And sometimes people would do things like paste stuff out of a document into the editor as HTML, and it would have all this kind of extra cruft that the other document had in as formatting, which would then be in the HTML. So it was kind of soupy. The HTML was soupy, and that was how it was. And then in 2020, MDN moved the content into GitHub, into a Git repo, and so you just edited the HTML directly. And this kind of exposed this soupy HTML to everybody. And that was what everybody just had to use to write documentation in it. And it was bad. So we had a project to start using something else as a source format. And the something else was Markdown for reasons that I think were good reasons. But because Markdown is limited, Markdown doesn't support a whole lot of things you can do in HTML. We had to decide what to do with all these different things. So we had a project in which I would go and find all of the instances of particular HTML elements in the MDN source. And then we decide what to do with them, you know, and the options would include stop doing that thing, just don't use that bit of HTML anymore. Or they'd be use raw HTML, because you can always embed HTML inside Markdown. That works, but it means you have to edit HTML, which isn't very nice for people. Or you'd invent new bits of Markdown and extend Markdown in your own nefarious ways, which is usually the kind of last resort, but it's sometimes something you have to do. And what I liked about the project was the way we did it, mostly. So every time we had one of these choices to make, we'd do it all explicitly. So I'd file an issue and I'd say, here's this thing. Like, we use description lists a lot in MDN. These are not supported in GitHub flavored Markdown. What are we going to do about this? And I'd say, you know, here are the main options we can have. If we want to extend it, here are some possible syntaxes we could use to extend it with. And we'd have a super open discussion about it. And we invited collaboration from Mozilla and from the W3C and, well, all of the maintainers and volunteer community. And it felt like a really good process, you know, and really often we'd end up with something which I hadn't anticipated, which was better than any of the suggestions I'd made. And it also meant that by the time we got to a decision, we were pretty sure that most of the maintainers, who are the people who are actually going to have to work with this stuff, were at least moderately satisfied with whatever we chose, you know? And I mean, so I guess it's proved. I mean, the things we built then was a pretty solid foundation. And I mean, we're 4 years on from that now, just about. And it still seems like a solid foundation to have. And I think this also relates to stuff we said before about long-term health, right? I mean, this for me was like a foundational thing that I wanted it to go on working for years and years and years in the future. And at the time we did it, it's like we're putting a lot of work into this project and nobody sees any difference. End user don't see any difference of this because this is all internal. It's all internal infra stuff. But for me, it was important that we had a foundation that the maintainers and the volunteer contributors could build on. So that was a good project.
As a maintainer, I can definitely appreciate the fact that it's so much easier to maintain because it's easier to read and easier to write. And we don't have to argue about whether someone used the right element for something. We do have discussions about, you know, heading levels, and that's actually automated at this point. The correction, you know, there's a bot that tells you that you aren't nesting correctly, but it saves so much discussion and so much time from the maintainer and from the writing perspective. Yeah. So thank you very much for initiating that project.
Well, like I say, I mean, what I like best about it was the actual process of how we reached consensus on these questions. What I've been doing lately, which I've enjoyed a lot, is working on web security documentation. So we ran a survey probably more than a year ago now about how web developers feel about web security and web security documentation. And it turns out they didn't feel good about it. And one of the, that in particular, web developers found it hard to understand what kinds of security threats they were facing. And they found it hard to understand the documentation or to find documentation about it. And one of the things that came out of that was a community group called delightfully SWAG, the Security Web Applications Guidelines, I think. And the purpose of that group is to develop guidelines for web developers about web security practices. And it's been great for me because I get to talk to people who are web security experts who have a vested interest in having better docs for this stuff. And so I get a lot of feedback on what kinds of things we can improve and what kinds of guidance we should be giving web developers. And I mean, I guess, as I said before, like I think sometimes Open Web Docs at its best is like a hub where we can connect up different people. And I think this is a thing that's been working really well in SWAG. So I've been working a lot with the Google security team who have a, you know, who understand their problems with things like CSP adoption. And so we talk about, you know, how can we make this better for people? How can we make the docs better? How can we have better guidance? And also actually the Mozilla security team as well for things like cross-site leaks, where, you know, there's a lot of, there's a lot to say and there's not a lot of clear documentation about it. So it's been really interesting for me working in that group.
Any other groups you've been interested in working with of late?
We work with WebDX and we are working on starting a new community group called the Docs Community Group. It doesn't have as good a name as SWAG, so maybe we should come up with something else. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, Will?
Yeah, like Estelle said, as well as SWAG, we've been working with a community group, WebDX, which I haven't been so much involved with. Florin has a lot, and they've been working a lot on Baseline and Browser Compat and this question of how do you represent groups of web platform features, I think, and how do you make slightly kind of higher level statements about support, so you're not like making the most granular statement possible about support, but you can talk about higher level feature support. And so we've been involved in that. Florian's been involved with WebDX and has again found it like a great forum for getting input from specification authors and browser developers.
The great thing about the WebDX, I've been involved not as heavily as Florian, is it's basically a place where all the web, the different browser vendors can come together and agree on something. So they actually got together and agreed on Baseline. So they came together and basically said, how are we going to say something is usable by everyone? How are you going to say it's a new feature? How are you going to say it's an experimental feature? So that's something that I know we've been talking about for years on MDN, which is when do you add the experimental feature and when do you remove it? Well, all the browser vendors got together within this WebDX umbrella, the DX standing for developer experience, because it's really important that the specification authors, the browser vendors, and the developers are all communicating in a language that all three groups understand.
Right. And so I think partly as a result of our generally positive experiences with things like Swag and WebDX, we've made a proposal for a community group in the W3C, which is about web documentation in general. And part of the idea of that is that it's this place where specification authors in particular, and browser engineers and web developers can come and kind of meet technical writers, not necessarily Open Web Docs technical writers, but we are going to be represented there. And Florian is one of the co-chairs of the group. And we hope it's going to be a place where we can collaborate and decide what sorts of projects need our attention. And we can get kind of feedback and guidance on the work that we do.
Part of the goal is to get the different specification authors and technical writers and browser vendors together to talk about documenting the web platform. So WebDX is more about the browser vendors and developer experience, but everything needs to be documented. And so this group would be more focused on documentation. That way, if there's like a specification, a new specification that comes out and they don't have documentation, hopefully like they will have heard of this group. Obviously not yet, because we haven't really been founded yet. We're just starting it now. But they could come to that group and say, hey, can I get help documenting this? Or technical writers can come and they say, I'm documenting this feature, but I don't know, like, I have all sorts of questions. Well, hopefully the spec authors will be there, or at least someone who knows a spec author for that particular spec, and they can say, hey, let me put you in contact. So basically a Yenta, a matchmaker for spec authors and technical writers and browser vendors. And another idea for it is kind of like a documentation help desk, which is, you know, if someone has a problem with their documentation or a problem explaining something, that they can actually come to the group and get help from a technical writer to make it sound good. But also, as technical writers, we have a lot of experience with the information architecture of a documentation site, and not that many people have that. So if someone can't afford a full-time technical writer, like any spec group can't afford a full-time technical writer, they just can't, they could at least, you know, have a group of technical writers to bounce their ideas off of. So helping guide people who ask for guidance is another goal.
I'm curious about how do you decide? This is a difficult thing. You know, reasonable people will disagree on what is the thing that you should focus on. So like, do you just have like a lot of freedom to focus? Do you get together and plan together? Do you, you know, draw straws somehow? Like what, how do you decide? Like when do you, you know, Estelle mentioned some things about baseline, but you know, things get documented before their baseline. Like when do you start expending efforts? You know, what if you get a single implementation, do you add it, you know, like two, do you add it? Does it, if it gets to CR in W3C sense, like, yeah, when?
We definitely do not wait till it gets to CR. So it gets, generally a browser vendor, when they release a new feature, is very proud of their new feature and wants to document it. So Google has a contract technical writer that writes documentation on new features being released in their browsers. Mozilla has technical writers that write documentation on new features that are released in Firefox. Microsoft, you know, we worked on with them on a progressive web app section of this of MDN, because that's a bunch of features put together. All the features are pretty well supported, but as a technology, because it uses JavaScript, HTML, and CSS, and iconography didn't fit neatly, so we worked with them to do that. But in terms of new documentation, so we do not document anything that doesn't have any browser support, and we will actually remove features if there are no browsers that support them, because sometimes in the past things have gotten in that didn't have browser support. When it only has one browser support, there's a little macro that says experimental, which basically puts a little thing at the top that says experimental, check the browser compatibility data. And then you now also have baseline at the top that shows a color and check marks or X's, depending on whether the browser supports it. So browser vendors will usually implement write documentation if they're releasing something and they're proud of it. So our job is actually to review that and make sure that it's not vendor specific, that it that documentation, because that documentation is unlikely to be revisited because there's so much documentation. I think there's over 11,000 pages on MDN, as an example. It's unlikely. So if the browser vendor starts the guide with historically this happened and now we have new features that do this, I'll be like, let's get rid of the old and new language and just, you know, what would we be saying a year from now?
I mean, I think you also asked Brian about, good question. How do you choose what projects to work on, right? How do I decide I'm going to be working on security for the next few months or whatever? Or how does Estelle decide what project she's going to take on? And these are, so we have a GitHub repository in which people can file proposals. So if somebody thinks something should be documented, they can file a proposal there, and there's a kind of template you can fill out in which you say, you know, why you think it matters, among other things. And we'll consider those proposals. We also have a steering committee, which consists of people who fund us, but also people who don't fund us, who are good sources of requirements, including people like representatives from the W3C and some kind of independent representatives who we expect are going to be helpful to us in finding useful things for us to do. And the steering committee can propose and to some extent is expected to propose projects for us to work on. I feel like this has not been working as well as it was. We have experimented with like slightly more formal ways of doing this, in which people in the steering committee get votes, and there are proposals that get made, and then people vote, and whoever gets the most votes, whichever proposals get the most votes, are things which we decide to work on. We don't do that anymore, and I think the engagement we've had with the steering committee is not as good as it used to be. And I think in some ways, well, in a lot of ways, the documentation community group, the W3C group, is an attempt to improve the situation. I think one thing about the steering committee is it became, although it's not a closed group, I think it sort of became like a closed group, and it was not obvious to people that they could participate in it. And I think, I hope and I think that the DocCG will be better for that. It'll be better at making connections to other organizations, and you know, that's really our hope. It's a source of requirements for us, because it's obviously it's important to us that we work on the right things and things that are important, right?
Being a subgroup of Open Web Docs, which is not necessarily the best known group in the world, being a subgroup of a not fairly well-known group meant that we don't have as much input as we would like. But being a subgroup of the WC3, a working group of the W3C, that will just basically make many people aware. They might not be aware that we're focused right now mostly on doing documentation for MDN, but it will basically make people much more aware, and hopefully we'll get much more input as to not necessarily being told what to work on, but realizing what needs to be worked on. All three of us are former engineers. I still consider myself an engineer, a front-end engineer. So I have a sense that I'm connected to the community, knowing what areas are lacking in terms of documentation. But definitely the more voices we have, especially of people at the front lines of specification writing and at the front lines of developing for the web, will provide us much better guidance. So we're looking forward to getting more input and hopefully more volunteers.
Like how do they do that?
So let me give a few GitHub links. If you want to submit a project that you want Open Web Docs to work on, you would go to our GitHub page, which again is github.com/openwebdocs/projects, because that is the name of the repository. Actually, it's project singular. And then in the issues section, you can submit an issue. And when you submit an issue, a new issue, it says OWD project proposal. You can also get to the OWD project proposal from our website. But if you're a GitHub user, just go to Open Web Docs and realize that project is the name of the repo of interest to you. If you find an issue on MDN, there's a few different ways you can report it. If it's a general issue, you can go to GitHub. All of the content on MDN itself is in the content repo. If it's a BCD issue, it's in the BCD repo, browser compat data issue. But the best way or the easiest way, I shouldn't say easy, I should say the simplest. The simplest way, because it's not necessarily easy, is to go down to the bottom of any page, and there's a little box on that page, and it says view the page on GitHub. And so you can view the page on GitHub and click on issue. Right above the BCD table, the browser compatibility table, there's also a link directly to that browser compat issue. So on every single page that has a browser compatibility data table, you can click right above the table to file a report with an issue with that, or you can directly edit or file an issue from that grid or that box at the bottom of the content of every page, of every content page.
I was just curious, like my memory of, you know, like when you wanted to learn about what was supported in the late 90s, you would go to the Netscape site. If you were looking in the early 2000s, maybe you're looking at a site that Microsoft had that had, you know, maintained by Microsoft people. And then at some point we had this, you know, Mozilla one that was MDN. And then I'm just curious, do you all remember somewhere around 2012, 2014, there was move in the W3C web platform docs?
Yes, do you remember that?
Yes.
Yep.
It had like kind of a colorful W logo that was
it was beautiful.
Pretty neat logo, I thought. But I remember like people like Microsoft donated a bunch of documentation from their suite, and it was like the idea was like, let's just get it not associated with a browser and put it in a neutral place. And I think maybe part of the idea was if we put it at the W3C, maybe W3C will also have people work on it. It's curious to me. I remember being at a TPAC and talking to somebody, maybe it was James Graham, I'm not sure, but I was saying like, why does Mozilla seem to want to not do that? Like there's not a big push to do that. There's sort of like these two things. And also, like, why is there not sort of money separately for this? You know, like, why do everybody pays dues to W3C? Like, couldn't part of that money be to do something like this, to sponsor the one place and the one infrastructure that hosts it all? And I'm just curious, like, you know, here we are a lot of years later, and it seems like we have gotten to something more close to that. And even at the AC meetings last week, I was talking to a lot of people about like, we should do more collective funding in W3C. And I actually held up Open Web Docs as what I think is a successful case, because it's like, we do have a lot of collective funding. There are like an independent group of people who do this. Right. And yeah, I don't know. I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on like how we got here or like where it should go. If there's also like maybe lessons for outside of Open Web Docs and in other spaces, like, I don't know, web platform tests. And, you know, there's lots of other things that are, also
it sounds
important.
Like there are two separate pieces in the question. One is about, it sounds to me anyway, like one is about funding and one is about platform. So one question is, well, why didn't webplatform.org work as a separate independent docs platform? You know, and the other is, you know, why isn't there funding for people to write docs that's independent of any one organization, which is what Open Web Docs is, really, you know? So I guess what I'd say is that, you know, in terms of the first question, I mean, the reason is that, you know, like people trust particular platforms and you know, you can build a new one, but not guarantee anybody will go there, right? So I think it's, you know, there's a lot of, well, you know, inertia, but also sort of trust in particular platforms that's built up over a long time, you know? And so I think that's just a fact, you know, but it's still important that funding exists for people to maintain documentation for its own sake, not as part of the outreach associated with, for example, a web browser.
Mm. So sort of splitting it out of developer relations and
just
making it its own thing.
Yeah. And I mean, one thing that happened, I think, in MDN, in Mozilla, in that kind of decade, really, from web platform docs onwards, really, and even before that, is that like MDN kind of really gradually morphed from being something that was just, you know, Mozilla Firefox docs into being something that was Open Web Docs, right? It was like web platform documentation. And that was a slow but very definite move that happened over those years. And I mean, various things. So, I mean, there was a time when Microsoft shut down MSDN and redirected all their traffic to MDN, right? And that was a big deal, right? And part of that, I think, that only became possible because Microsoft were reassured reasonably enough that MDN was not just a Mozilla property. It documented the web, right? And for that to be true, I think you do need to have this kind of, you know, you need to have a certain amount of like open governance about it, I think, right?
And I think webplatform.org, which was the W3C version, I believe it was Doug Sheppers and Leah Veroux that were on that team. But that shows the difficulty of starting something from scratch and getting buy-in when there's something already bigger out there. You couldn't expect Mozilla to give all the documents over to something smaller.
Definitely. I mean, even in those conversations, I remember whoever I was talking to saying like, well, you don't realize how hard it has been even to get people to go to MDN instead of W3 schools, because W3 schools very early became the place that people were going, even though like a lot of the information was not good. It became the place. And then there was like all this inertia where they come up first on search results, you know, and it takes a lot of time to move that needle with PageRank and everything anyway.
Yeah. And I think W3 schools kind of tells us what the problem is with AI. I'm not saying that they are AI. I'm not actually equating the two at all, but people knew about W3 schools and they linked to it. And so it got higher and higher and higher. Whereas MDN, you know, W3 schools is this closed environment that has certain writers. I don't know much about it, but if they have a mistake, I don't know how you go about correcting it. I certainly can't go in and correct it. Whereas MDN, anyone in the community can make an edit, and it is reviewed by the maintainers. So hopefully only correct information gets in. But 99.9% of the information that gets in is correct. And then if a mistake gets in, someone will correct it very quickly. That's not what happens with W3 schools or any closed environment. But because there are so many links, it still comes up first. And if something is inaccurate there or on Stack Overflow or on anything that AI is scraping, that is the result you're going to get. So it's really important to have a, a source of documentation that is done by AI as in actual individuals, which is the only good kind of AI. Because when I, every time I've asked, you know, like I'll ask AI a question, I already know the answer, but I'll ask a question, a technical question, it has never gotten it correct. And the thing is, I'm asking it pretty advanced stuff, usually because I'm writing on this new topic and there isn't that much on it, but 100% of the time it has been inaccurate. So it's really important that we have the web platform documented by actual individuals that research it and confirm that everything is accurate. So it's so needed. And it's not just, you know, it's important that everything is documented, not just the stuff that is important to browser vendors at this time, but all the stuff that maybe has no one, no browser vendor going rah, rah, rah behind it, such as security and authentication, privacy, and accessibility. We try to add those features into all of our documentation. And sometimes what the browser is doing is not exactly what the specification says. And so we file a bug or we report it.
Yeah, I like that there is that. Open Web Docs becomes sort of an extra test on implementation versus specification. You know, that's not just coming from implementers, but people who are, like you, looking at what implementers have done.
Yep.
Yes.
Estelle, Will, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for giving us the time and the platform.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks for all you do for the web.
Absolutely. Until next time.